Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hey, please be seated, everybody. Members of the jury, I want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves. You did no investigation and received no information. Is that all correct?
Correct.
Didn't see any media accounts. Is that correct?
Correct.
And no one approached you. Is that correct?
Correct.
Hey, Mr. Whitney, your next witness, please.
Plaintiff's call, Dr. Joseph Corcoran.
I do.
Promises.
Let's talk about how Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital was managed during the time of Maya Kowalski's admission. And specifically, I want to touch on how risk management was integrated into the hospital's organizational structure. Let's start at a high level. And the jury has heard some discussion of the Joint Commission. Would you reaffirm for the jury the role that the Joint Commission plays in hospital accreditation and governance?
Yes, so the Joint Commission is a nonprofit organization that evaluates hospitals and other healthcare entities on a recurring basis to make sure that they are in compliance with the regulations, conditions of participation that are really the owner's manual to how to run a healthcare facility like a hospital.
And you just mentioned conditions of participation. Are those derived from federal regulatory guidance?
Yes, they are. So conditions of participation are actually published by CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and they really form the foundation or the backbone of the accreditation process.
So we have the Joint Commission, it's a private entity. We have CMS, it's a federal entity. And then in Florida, is there also a state regulator that looks at these issues?
There is. The Agency for Healthcare Administration, also known as ACA, is based in Tallahassee. They oversee licensure and regulatory compliance for the state.
Now, with respect to the governing body of Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital, have you come to learn about self-reports of deficiencies at the governing body level to these three entities?
Yes, I have.
What have you learned in terms of self-reports to start with ACA in December of 2018?
I understand that the hospital leadership, sometime around the Christmas holiday, but probably just prior to, actually went to Tallahassee to address in person issues that had been identified within the hospital that put them at odds with the conditions of participation.
Was there also a self-report to CMS?
Yes. In the week prior to Christmas 2018, ACA was also in December of 2018. But in the full week prior to Christmas of 2018, a leadership group also traveled to Atlanta, which is the regional office for CMS, and had a similar conversation with the federal regulators about shortfalls that they had that had been identified inside the program.
And then, given these issues and these self-reports, did the Joint Commission also become involved?
They did. And that was done through a self-report that I believe was done either electronically or in writing on or about the 28th of November, 2018.
And so you had then both the federal and the state entity and the private nonprofit Joint Commission looking at and scrutinizing the hospital's management structure at that point?
Well, yes, they were looking at it from that point, but there also had been some visits earlier in the year as well.
All right. Did these issues manifest for the first time in December of 2018?
No. All right. My understanding is that the issues were first identified at the end of 2015. So they were not new issues.
All right. Let's walk through the timeline with some documents. So if we could please display 2811A, page 1. Dr. Corcoran, at the top of 2811, I see a header that says Agency for Healthcare Administration. Is that the Florida agency you talked about?
Yes, that's ACA.
Judge, I'm sorry. This doesn't say A, so I just want to make sure we're looking at the right document.
Yeah. 2811 was not redacted.
I thought you said A.
I'm sorry. My apologies. 2811. All right, we're looking at 2811, Agency for Healthcare Administration. And below the Agency for Healthcare Administration, right there, if you could keep that where it was, what is this document? It says in the top left box.
Correct. This is a statement of deficiencies and a plan of correction.
And if you could note the date on the right side there for me.
February 23rd, 2017.
And so what's the relationship to the date of discharge of Maya Kowalski? Is that approximately a month and a half?
Yes, sir. About 6 weeks.
And this is a good view, so just keep it like this, please. And then the last two paragraphs we can see there on the left side, where were the deficiencies identified within the hospital?
In the risk management department as part of a risk management survey.
All right. If we could now display exhibit 2815. I see CMS at the top right. Is this the federal agency you were referencing?
Yes, sir. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. That's the federal regulatory agency.
And this letter or notice is dated January 31st, 2019. And who's it addressed to?
It's addressed to the interim CEO of the hospital, Dr. Kevin Sowers.
Have you come to learn when Mr. Sowers took on the position of interim CEO at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital?
He became interim CEO in December of 2018. I'm not sure of the specific day, but it was in December following the departure of the previous CEO.
And who did he replace?
Dr. Jonathan Ellen.
And how long had Dr. Jonathan Ellen been the CEO of Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital?
Gosh, 6 or 7 years, if memory serves.
So Dr. Ellen would have been the president and CEO of Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital during the time of Maya's admission?
That's correct.
And if you could zoom out a bit for me, and that's a fine view there. In the second paragraph in the letter, it references a determination of immediate jeopardy. Do you see that?
I do.
Would you please explain to the jury what immediate jeopardy is?
So when deficiencies or non-compliance with the conditions of participation, the rule book, when those deficiencies are considered egregious, widespread, actually it's defined further down as, could you scrap that please? It's defined as an immediate or serious threat to patient health and safety. So an immediate jeopardy is as severe a finding, and it carries an equally severe threat. If an immediate jeopardy is not remedied quickly in a timely manner, with an immediate jeopardy, you are typically required to provide an immediate mitigation plan before the survey team leaves. You then have to send a corrective action plan within 10 days and have that largely executed within 23 days. If you fail to meet that 23 days, you potentially lose access to all funding from Medicare and Medicaid.
Is it more or less a death threat to a hospital?
It is a financial death threat to a hospital, yes, sir.
I'm sorry, what's the legal base leading, Your Honor? Overall.
Is there any classification under CMS evaluation and survey more severe than immediate jeopardy?
None that doesn't involve literally taking over the hospital.
All right. If you could drop that and then pull up the bold text there, that the 42 CFR sections for me. Now, a few moments ago, you referenced conditions of participation.
Yes, sir.
And we see here reference to the Federal Code of Regulations. Are these the conditions of participation you were referencing?
Those are four of them.
All right. And are the why are these four on this document?
Okay. So the immediate jeopardy was centered on four specific shortfalls in their exercise of meeting the conditions of participation. Governing body is the interaction of the board, which has ultimate responsibility for the entire facility, and the two primary parties, the medical staff, represented by the Medical Executive Committee, and the administration or management of the hospital, which starts with the CEO. QAPI, Quality Assurance and Performance Improvement, that is making sure that we're staying between the guardrails and delivering good care.
I'm going to stop you there.
Thank you.
All right. So if you look at these four things, these are the specific deficiencies that Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital was found to have exhibited or demonstrated at this time.
These were the areas where their deficiencies were so egregious and widespread that they contributed to this immediate jeopardy. Correct.
All right. And have you had an opportunity to hear the VP of Patient Safety and Quality discuss these issues?
I did.
Who was that?
Ms. Green.
What was her first name?
Virginia.
Okay.
Is this a quiz?
Does Angela sound right?
Angela, sure. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I apologize to Ms. Green.
In terms of having been issued a finding of immediate jeopardy, did Ms. Green conduct a retrospective review of hospital records to see where these deficiencies should be placed in the responsibility place?
Yes, she did.
And how far in retrospect did she look back to determine where the hospital had fallen short?
She said that one team in the hospital went back 3 years, and I believe that she took her response back 5 years.
Judge objection, hearsay.
Party admission.
Overruled.
And so, whether it was 5 years, so they're conducting this retrospective review in January 2019, receiving this letter.
That's correct.
It would take us back on the five-year basis to January of 2014.
That's correct.
Or on the three-year basis to January of 2016.
That's correct.
In their review, without getting specific, were specific deficiencies noted in that retrospective review?
There were.
And generally, did those have to do with adverse patient outcomes?
They...
Objection, Your Honor. I think we're going beyond scope.
Sustained on that one.
All right. I'll move on. Let's put in, let's put up 2817, please. Now we're going to get into some of the internal communications at Johns Hopkins that surrounded...
Should be 2817A.
2817A.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's... Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So here it's 2817A. We have an email from Ms. Green dated February 25th, 2019. So this would have been just following the notification of immediate jeopardy. Is that correct?
About a month after, yes.
And then,
Three weeks.
We can see there her position at the time. What is the role within a hospital of the senior director for patient safety and quality?
Well,
objection, Your Honor, foundation.
Overall.
As the title suggests, they lead a team whose primary objective is to make sure that the care as it's delivered is delivered in a safe manner, above all else, do no harm. And so they are responsible for making sure that the care is safe and the quality of the outcomes are optimized.
If we could advance to page 3 of 2817A, please. And if you could get a whole page view for page 3. All right. So I want to focus for a moment first on the subject line at the top of this email. It says, how about this for Kevin's talking points to the board on CMS 2567? Now, here, who is Kevin?
She's referring to Kevin Sowers, who was the interim CEO that replaced Dr. Ellen.
And the CMS 2567, is that the finding of immediate jeopardy?
CMS 2567 actually refers to the form number. Government issue forms always have an ID number on the base, and CMS 2567 is the page, the report that the findings are actually published on and made available to the hospitals.
All right, and so in the middle of the page, there's a paragraph that's short. It says there are four major areas we are actively working to improve. Would those map back to the four conditions of participation we saw a moment ago?
They do.
All right. Let us advance to page 5 of this exhibit, please. And we're going to talk specifically about the governing body and what types of issues were noted within the hospital during this retrospective review. The first bullet point under governing body, if you'll read that to yourself, and my question for you is, what have you learned about what was lacking between the message and the elevation of information between the president and the board in the previous 3 years?
So again, the board has the ultimate responsibility to make sure that everything is running as expected. It was demonstrated through this process that there was poor communication where problems were not shared appropriately. They weren't shared between, remember we talked about divisions, they weren't shared laterally, they weren't shared up. And they were certainly not getting shared to the board, so the board really was not able to do its job of overseeing the quality of care.
And then if we move down to the third primary bullet point, there's a smaller one in between, that's why I said primary. But it begins, restructuring of risk management
right.
to report directly to the health system. When Ms. Green, or Ms. Franklin, references reporting directly to the health system, what is she referencing there?
She's talking about having a direct link of communication to Johns Hopkins Health System in Baltimore. Prior to all of this, Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital was the only one of the Hopkins-affiliated hospitals that didn't have that link. In other words, at Johns Hopkins, everything was by design kept locally and was supposed to be managed locally. This gave them an opportunity and access to the expertise that is that candidly is one of the things that Johns Hopkins is really known for around quality and patient safety. So it was giving them access to that expertise.
So just so I make sure I understand, there are several Johns Hopkins hospitals within the Johns Hopkins health system.
Correct.
Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital is one of them.
That's correct.
And it was discovered during this process that Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital was the only Johns Hopkins health system hospital where risk management at the hospital level was not reporting to the system. Is that right?
That's correct.
Then if we move down three from the bottom, it says the revision of the complaint and grievance process. There's been some discussion in this courtroom about the complaints made by the Kowalski family. What is the proper operation of the complaint and grievance process as it relates to risk and patient safety within a hospital?
Check your eyes beyond scope.
So, a grievance actually is is recognized as having specific responsibilities. As a hospital operator, if my team received a grievance, we were required to answer that grievance within 10 calendar days. And there were, again, communication issues where grievances and complaints, like the Kowalskis shared with members of the staff at All Children's, were just not addressed at all, let alone in 10 days.
And then the last I'd like to focus to on this page is the last bullet point. It says massive education campaign on speaking up and speaking out. Have you had an opportunity to hear Ms. Green discuss this campaign?
I did.
What was the genesis of this massive education campaign?
So she described that members of the care team in a variety of positions, if they raised awareness of something not working, whether it's an outcome or whether it's a glitch, there was, number one, it was difficult to get an audience. And when you did open your mouth, she cited examples of where there was retribution against a whistleblower, a complainant. This speaking up and speaking out was a program that they put in place, kind of like see something, say something, and it was to change that. It was to encourage people to speak up when they see something wrong.
Was this because there was a culture of retaliation and retribution previously?
Yes, sir.
You're not leading culture
conclusion. Come forward on both instances.
If you could repeat your answer, just in case.
Yes, there was she spoke of a culture of retaliation and retribution.
Against internal employees.
That's correct. Anyone who spoke up did so at significant risk.
If we could advance to the next page, on page 6, please. Here, Ms. Green, or Ms. Franklin, references multiple town hall meetings. Do you see that reference in the last bullet point?
I do.
Have you had the opportunity to review some video of those town hall meetings?
Yes.
What were acknowledged as several of the hospital's failures in those town hall meetings?
So the town hall meetings were hosted by Dr. Sowers, Kevin Sowers, who was the interim CEO that followed Dr. John Allen's departure. And he was very candid about where they were falling short and basically promising to do better. He acknowledged that their shortfalls in governance were, I believe the term was, substantially contributed to prior lapses in care. He talked about why they got the IJ, what was involved, and how they needed to turn things around. He characterized at one point that Hopkins let us down. And I think he was speaking for the Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital community when he made that statement.
You threw in the middle of that IJ.
Yes, sir.
Define what that acronym is, just in case.
Again, I'm sorry. Immediate jeopardy. That's the financial death threat that I referenced earlier.
All right. If we could advance to 2818A, beginning at page 069, please. Yeah, first one, first page. If you'll just zoom out so we can see the whole page, please. All right. Now, am I correct that this is the form 2567 that was discussed earlier?
You can see on the bottom left, it says form CMS 2567, yes.
So this would be the document that CMS speaks to the hospital through about where the deficiencies were noted.
That's correct.
And am I correct that in the left column, on some pages, you'll have more description of the deficiencies, but in the right column, you'll have the hospital's efforts to correct their deficiencies?
That's correct. So the left side is where they cite. In the first column, they cite the specific standard or condition of participation where the hospital is not in compliance. In the wide column to the right is where they will describe, this is the standard, this is what we saw, this is where you're not meeting expectations. And it tends to be fairly specific. To the right of that, the broad column is where the hospital writes in their plan, their corrective action plan to address that specific element of the shortfall.
And Mr. Reyes, if you would, there's two bullet points there on the right, in the right column, if bold text. If you could just pull out the bold text for each of those so we can focus on those. All right, so this first bolded bullet point speaks to the organization as it related to the risk management department. What did you learn about the failures and the ways that the hospital integrated risk management into their division-level operations?
So this points out that risk management was not included in the process.
And further down in that paragraph, it references, before that bullet point, it says the JHATCH functional org structure chart, was updated to reflect the relationship of the MEC. What is the MEC in this reference?
Medical Executive Committee.
All right. So,
and they oversee the medical staff.
And so it was, at this point, having the deficiencies been noted, it was, the org chart was restructured so that risk management was properly reporting to or talking to the MEC, medical staff, the president, the board. Is that right?
That's what it indicates, yes.
And then the next bullet point, if you'd read that to yourself, about no evidence in risk management reports. Mm-hmm. And describe to the jury, please, what kind of failure that indicates.
This was very surprising. It indicates that over 15 months prior to the survey, that there was no demonstrated effort to track and trend what was going on in the hospital in terms of quality. I think Dr. Perno and Dr. Napolitano both talked about tracking and trending as the key function of the risk management committee, which is different than the risk management department. And if you're not collecting data and if you're not sharing data, it's impossible to do that. So the idea of tracking and trending is if you notice something that starts to go off course, you push it back on course before it drifts way off course. So without the tracking and trending, there really were no guardrails, effectively.
If we could advance to page 72 of the, it's three more pages. Next page. And the top, that's perfect. Read that first bold bullet point to me, if you could.
Starting with according?
Yes, sir.
You want me to read it out loud?
No, I just want you to read it to yourself.
Okay.
And explain to the jury the significance of adverse medical incidents residing with the risk manager and not being elevated?
Right. So adverse medical incidents covers a variety of harms that occur in the hospital, impacting mostly patients. And so it looks like those harms or adverse medical incidents got to the risk manager, but again, they weren't shared. And they weren't shared up to leadership. Jackie Crane was over the risk management department until her departure. And there was no portal until after corrective action was put in for these to be shared at a system level. So, I mean, it's metaphorically, it's the equivalent of just being stuffed in a drawer.
And you mentioned there Ms. Crane, who was senior counsel.
She was.
And when these issues were finally discovered by the federal regulator, was she removed?
She exited at the time that Dr. Ellen exited.
Now, this document is quite detailed, and the jury will have at least 16 pages back there, so I'm not going to go through every specific deficiency.
Let's
move to 2819. 2819A, excuse me.
I was ready.
All right, so here we have an email from Ms. Green, January 16th, even before the CMS letter was delivered on January 31st, correct?
That's correct. This is dated January 16, 2019.
And it's addressed primarily, or at least first, to Mr. Sowers, the interim CEO?
Correct.
All right, and then she attaches, let's go to page 2 of this, please. She attaches the hospital's anticipation of what's coming and how they're going to rectify the situation. So let's go to page 3. And we've seen these terms in, let's say, federal regulatory agency speak. But here they are in the hospital's words. So we're just looking at the focus area of governance and the two primary findings there. Would you speak to those? Let's start with over-reliance on department-level case review. Would you please explain what that means?
Right. So recall that the Department of Pediatrics had 15, and at this time I believe they had actually 20 divisions reporting up to it. So the Department of Pediatrics, which is pediatric medicine, managed 15 to 20 different divisions, and then the Department of Pediatric Surgery managed all of the surgical subspecialties. And so they in this governance structure, they created parallel systems for quality assurance and performance improvement. And so, again, they were kind of left to police themselves.
And the second one there, issues did not flow freely to the board. You've spoken about that a little bit earlier. Is there anything to add?
No, again, if the board is accountable. If something goes wrong, the board has its feet held to the fire. But as we've seen elsewhere, if the information is not flowing in and they're not able to pull the information up, they can't do their jobs.
And then we get to the second focus area, which is culture. And it references the fear of retribution with speaking up that you mentioned earlier.
Yes, sir.
How does hospital culture manifest at the patient level?
So,
Your Honor, you're on scope, cause for speculation.
Overall.
So culture starts at the top. And one of the elements of just culture, which is actually a formal program, one of the elements is that you really want to think about what's best for patients. And it acknowledges that mistakes can be made, and it tries to differentiate between I made a mistake or I knew it was wrong and I did it anyway. The focus on culture as the patient sees it, that's really the patient experience. Are my needs being met? Do I feel like I'm being listened to? Are people advocating for me? You know, Maya was 10 years old, celebrated her 11th birthday at the hospital.
Let me interrupt you for a question please. Before I get an objection.
Sure.
You mentioned an advocate. What is the concept of a patient advocate within a hospital?
Well,
objection, I'll be on scope.
A word on that one.
A patient advocate is somebody who is keeping an eye on all the moving parts. You know, there's a lot of focus on what the doctors do, appropriately. But there's an awful lot of people that have to do their jobs well if that care is going to hit the target. And so an advocate is someone who is kind of watching all the inbound aircraft and making sure that they're aligned for what's best for the patient.
Is it true that a patient advocate would be someone that would be present with the child over the course of their admission?
Leading.
Not side by side. I'm sorry, Judge.
And the sustained leading.
Have you observed the different, and had an opportunity to watch the testimony of the different witnesses that the defense presented here?
Many of them, yes, sir.
Did at any point you see someone who claimed to be the patient advocate for Maya Kowalski?
Objection, Your Honor. Relevance calls for conclusion. Calls for argument.
Overruled.
Somewhat surprisingly, no. We heard a lot from members of the teams, the medical team, the social work team, the risk management team, and there was a lot of team management talked about in how Maya's care was delivered, but I don't recall hearing from anyone that was really playing guardian angel, somebody who was really looking out for Maya and her care.
If we could advance to page 5. And this is the last one we'll speak to in this hospital presentation. Disclosure and communication with families. And then it says inconsistent practice and documentation after adverse events. Would you please explain this concept in the context of hospital management and the importance of communication with families?
Objection calls for argument and for a narrative.
Overall, you can answer.
Thank you. So, I tell my doctors and my team, when I was in the role, I told my doctors and my teams, if you make a mistake, own it, just like I tell my kids. So disclosing, hey, we made a mistake, is considered an important first step in communication and regaining trust that can very easily be lost if a mistake is made or if outcome is not what everybody intended to get. So inconsistent practice means that there was no endorsed or encouraged best practice for all of the divisions and ultimately the departments to follow.
Through your observation of the testimony here, including that of Dr. Jennifer Katzenstein, has it come to your attention that Jack and Beata Kowalski attempted to communicate their concerns with the hospital?
Objection, Your Honor. Based on the province of the jury's calling for editorial comment on the testimony.
Sustained.
We can take that down. Based upon your background training experience and to a reasonable management probability, do you believe that the deficiencies that we've discussed here caused or contributed to the patient experience and the harm done to Maya Kowalski?
Jackson Foundation.
Without question, the gaps in the function of the governing body, again, Dr. Sowers said It was a contributing factor in previous lapses. I have no reason to counter that opinion. It's undoubtedly true that they contributed.
All right, nothing further this time.
Mr. Hunter, are you?
It's not me.
Good afternoon, Dr.
Good afternoon, sir.
You were provided a number of documents regarding various surveys, correct?
I saw several documents that involved surveys, yes, sir.
Were you given a set of documents regarding a Joint Commission triennial survey from September of 2015?
I saw the summary of it, yes, sir.
That resulted in the Joint Commission accrediting the hospital, did it not?
In 2015, yes, sir.
All right. And that accreditation was good for the following 3 years unless it was revoked, correct?
That's correct.
All right. And did you also see a survey, and incidentally, these surveys are fairly arduous events, are they not?
Typically, you've got 3, 4, maybe 5 surveyors on site for 3, 4, or 5 days, yes, sir.
When you were at Brandon Regional Hospital, did you handle those?
I was absolutely involved in every day that they were on site.
Very searching review, correct?
They were stressful, yes, sir.
All right. They went to all aspects of the hospital, correct?
They did.
All right. So when they did that at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital in September of 2015, they reaccredited the hospital, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then in 2016, they did a follow-up random review. You saw that, did you?
Could you refresh my recollection on that, sir?
Sure. Wasn't there in March of 2016 a follow-up review of evidence of compliance with the accreditation they had been granted the year before, in March of 2016?
Improper way to refresh recollection.
Right. If you're going to refresh his recollection, why don't you show him the document?
Let me get that pulled up, Judge. Let me ask a couple questions first before I do that.
Thank you.
Here you go. You were present during Ms. Green's deposition the other night, right?
I was there, yes,
and
sir.
And were you provided a copy of the review done by the Joint Commission in March of 2016?
Mr. Hunter, I can't say with certainty that I was. It was parents' weekend at my son's college, and I was up in Gainesville. So I played dad instead of expert witness this weekend. I can't tell you which documents, off the top of my head, which documents I saw and which I did not. I certainly did not see but a small fraction of what was turned over.
Okay. Well, did you see a risk management survey that was done by ACA in February of 2017?
Again, I'd like to have my recollection refreshed. I don't recall which ones I've seen and which I didn't see.
Did you
just hand them the document if you...
Judge, I'm sorry that there's a stack of documents that would gag 3 billy goats and a maggot about this tall.
I don't understand what that means.
Well, it's a lot of documents. And I don't have at my fingertips the ability to grab that particular document. I had
Do we need to take a few minutes so you can organize?
It would be very helpful, Your Honor.
Why don't we take 5 minutes? Members of the jury, do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do any investigation and receive no information.
All right.
The jury is out of our presence. Doctor, you're in the middle of your testimony. Do not discuss this case with anyone. Mr. Hunter, do you need 5 minutes, 10 minutes? How much
ten
time?
10 minutes would be fine, Judge.
I'm sorry?
10 minutes would be better, Judge.
Okay, we'll be back in 10 minutes, but remember we have timing issues with a witness, so.
Yes, sir.
Okay, 10 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Let's bring back the jury.
Yes, sir.
Please be seated, everybody. Members of the jury, I want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves, you did not do any investigation, and received no information. Is that all correct?
Correct.
No one approached you about this case, is that correct?
Correct.
And you didn't see any media coverage, is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes, Your Honor. May I approach witness?
You may.
Dr. Corcoran, I've got an accreditation report here from March of 2016. Have you ever seen that before?
I don't believe so.
So, you've never reviewed what I've just shown?
I don't believe I've seen this particular report.
Yes, sir. Can I really approach for a moment?
Sure.
So, the jury's aware you were provided us. Number of documents, sir. You attended a deposition Friday night.
I did.
Okay. There are a number of documents that you got to see as a result of that, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The one I just showed you, you said you'd never seen before.
I don't recognize it. It may have been introduced, but I don't recognize it.
Well, my question to you is, do you have any reason to question the proposition that in March and April of 2016, a joint commission survey occurred unannounced at All Children's Hospital, and their accreditation was affirmed?
Objection. Counsel testified.
Overruled. He can answer.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat this question, please?
Yes, sir. Do you have any reason to question that in March of 2016, followed up in April of 2016, a joint commission survey took place at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital, and that their accreditation was affirmed?
So there, I have no reason to question you, and that if accreditation was renewed in 2015, then unless there were a flagrant violation, the accreditation would not really be on the table at that time.
Well, wouldn't there be occasional random follow-ups to accreditation inspections?
Short answer, no. Most of the time, Joint Commission returns to a facility in response to a complaint or awareness of some kind of a problem.
So you've never heard in your long experience of random surveys taking place after an accreditation in the preceding years?
Objection, argumentative, overruled.
There can be follow-up surveys. When the accreditation survey is done, then CMS actually audits the work of the Joint Commission and will come in and do, I'm blanking on the term for it, but they will basically come in and affirm that the Joint Commission survey is accurate.
Okay. The document I just showed you was a Joint Commission survey, correct?
I believe so, yes, sir. Okay.
And you have no reason to question that it affirmed the accreditation?
Well, I don't think that was in the time frame. Typically, CMS comes back in 45 days or less. So I don't think that's the kind of survey that I was referring to, sir.
All right. Well, let's go with this another way.
May I? If you'll show me the document, I'm happy to do a quick review of it.
Well, I'll be happy to show you this and the two subsequent follow-ups from these compliance.
Just the three, or is that it?
This is a different one.
Okay. Can you give me a minute to look at them?
Sure.
Okay.
Perhaps, Mr. Hunter, you could return to the lectern. Thank you.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk. Breathe. Rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.